Okay, so we are holding near the top of Samach Gimel Amud Aleph, five lines from the top. Still in the middle of talking about the kosher and non-kosher birds, we went through the various details about the simanim of them, and about the and talking about the identities of some kosher and non-kosher ones, or at least identities that were known in the times of the Gemara, which nowadays we're not real sure of. And including a bunch that the Gemara itself said there's a suffix on them.
And the conclusion was?
The conclusion was there's a suffix, so you can't eat them because you can't be sure whether they're kosher or not, because one of the simonim is that the gizzard of the bird is peelable, hello? And with these, you can only peel it with a knife. It's not that it's too tightly together to be able to peel. It's too tight. The two layers of it are too tightly stuck together to peel by hand, even if you leave it out in the sun to soften. So therefore, there's a suffix on them. Okay. Some more. It's obviously we need to be mine. Okay. So now the Gemara is going to go through and talk about the identities of a number of the non-kosher birds that are mentioned in the circuit. So you have altogether, the Gemara is going to tell us later that there are 24 altogether, basically because you have 20 and then it says four times Luminehu or Luminoi. So that adds extra ones. We'll see if the Gemara will discuss.
Kosher birds were how many?
Total kosher birds, we said, is much greater. The Gemara is going to tell us on the base. There's many more kosher than non-kosher species. That's why the total lists the non-kosher ones. The Gemara says, a mispar. The Gemara says there's no number of how many kosher. Nowadays, again, because we only eat the soda, so we only have a few. But yeah. But in principle, you have the vast majority of birds out there are kosher. You only have the 24 that are mentioned in the Torah that are not. Well, at least that's according to Rashi. I suppose that there could be other ones as well, but still not nearly as many as the non-kosher ones. But now, so the Gemara is going to go through now and talk about the identities of some of the ones that are mentioned in the Pesukim. So, Amar Rav Yehuda, Sholoch zehasholah dogim min hayam. The bird that the Torah calls Sholoch, which is one of the birds mentioned in the Pesukim over there, is a bird that catches fish from the sea. So something like, for example, in many of the English translations, they translate it as a cormorant. It's a type of bird that does that, if it catches fish from the water. So it could be that, could be some other, whatever. And another one, duchifas, another one that's mentioned in the Pesukim over there, called duchifas. Why is it called that? Shehoidoi kofos, because its glory is tied. Glory meaning it's the comb on its head. It has a comb, it has a crest of feathers on its head that looks like it's tied and doubled over. Rashi describes it, makes it look, the look of it, it looks like it's folded down into the head. So Rashi
folded
down onto the head. It's like it's folded down onto the head, and as if like it's folded down onto the head and tied there. So Rashi on the Pesukim translates it as a hoopoe. It's a bird that has a large crest on its head like that. Over here Rashi mentioned
birds like that.
In this particular one that has a crest like that, so that's one. Anyway, Rashi over here gives a different identification of it. He says it's a bird about the size of a chicken, which he gives for it a word that translates it as a wild peacock. So in fact, there is quite a bit of discussion because in some kehillahs they actually had the minhag to eat peacocks. I mentioned yesterday a sefer that was printed in Italy in the 1830s that has illustrations of a number of birds that they had a masorah of them being kosher, and one of the ones he has illustrated over there is a peacock. So one explanation is that indeed there'd be a difference between the domesticated and the wild ones. The domesticated ones would be kosher. The wild ones, Rashi's translation over here includes the word salvia or whatever, which means wild. Sylvia is the Latin word for forest, so therefore the wild one would be, it's also related to the English word savage, so the wild ones would be not kosher, the domestic ones maybe are. Okay. Tani nami hochibilin, similarly in the Braise, duchifas shahoidei kofus, the duchifas, the bird that has its glorious crest is tied down, again, like Rashi had said, that because of the size of it, it makes it look like it's tied down and attached inside the head or something. And by the way, you should know this is the same bird that brought the Shomer for the Beit HaMikdash. So not exactly brought it, but you have the story in Gittin, the whole story over there where Shlomo HaMelech sends Ben Yehoyada to find the Shomer. And he finds a nest of this type of bird, and this bird uses the shamir to crack open mountains in order to plant seeds over there to grow food for its young. So Benayahu waits until the mother bird comes there, and then he scares it away and picks up the shamir. So in the Gemara over there, it calls this bird Nagar Tura, which literally means the one that saws open mountains, because it uses the shamir to saw open mountains. And in fact, that is the translation. If you look in Targum Onkelos on this pasuk, there's a duchi pas, it translates it Nagar Tura. So it's the same bird. Rabbi Yochanan, so speaking of these two birds, the Sholoch and the Duchifas, that the Gemara has just identified, the Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan ki habichazi Sholoch, when Rabbi Yochanan would see a Sholoch bird catching fish from the sea. Like we just said, Omar, he said on that, the pasuk, as the pasuk says, Mishpatecha Tachoim Rabba. It's the end of a pasuk where the beginning of it is Tidkot Kahar Rekel, which is the next pasuk, the Gemara quotes. Ki habichazi Nimola, when he would see an ant going about its business and collecting food and whatever, Omar would say the first half of that pasuk, Tidkot Kahar Rekel. Your tzedakah, Hashem, is like a mighty mountain. Mishpatecha Tachoim Rabba goes on the Sholoch. So what is it? Rashi was
to me.
Okay, Mishpatecha Tachoim Rabba means your judgments are like the great deep, are like the great depth. So Rashi gives two explanations. One is that in the case, what Rabbi Yochanan was so impressed about is that even a tiny little ant, Hashem makes sure to provide food for it just as much as for the bigger animals. Your tzedakah, your righteousness, even towards the tiny creatures like the ants, is kahar rekel. You take care of just as much of them as of the mighty mountains and the other big things in creation.
We're just as funny as the...
That's fine, but still, it makes us realize, if Hashem, that's the point, if Hashem takes care even of the tiny ant, how much more so that we realize, in other words, that Hashem doesn't care about things by size, and therefore, yes, that even though we're also tiny compared to Hashem, but Hashem also takes care of us individually also. So that's
fine.
Okay, so that's one. And then on the other hand, when it comes to the Sholoch, that Hashem decides when a particular fish is going to live and when it's going to die, and Hashem arranges for the Sholoch to come, Mishpatecha Tachoim Rabba, your judgments are in the great depths, that when Hashem decides it's time for a certain fish to die, then he sends a Sholoch to go and catch it and eat it. That's one explanation of Rashi.
The shark cannot go in the depth of the ocean.
It can. It dives into the ocean and catches fish, yeah. It doesn't just catch them from the surface.
What about the whales? And
what about them? This is when Rabbi Yochanan saw these creatures, he would say this. Rashi gives another explanation, which is that the ant would be tzidkos chokahar rekel, that the ant doesn't have to work so hard for a living. It's relatively easy for an ant to find food. So therefore, like Hashem does tzedakah to it, so to speak, as opposed to the Sholoch, which is Mishpatecha, Hashem treats it in a more severe fashion, in the sense that it has to work really hard for its food. It has to dive into the ocean in order to catch fish. That's the expression at the end of Kiddushin, right, that by rights we should also have an easy living, and instead, it says over there that we messed up, and therefore we have to work hard for a living. So therefore, the Sholoch is an example of that in the animal kingdom, an animal that has to work really hard for a living, as opposed to the Nimala, as opposed to the ant, which has it relatively easy. It finds food easily. Okay, there's other explanations as well, but one thing that comes out of this, there's the famous thing that one of the chidushim of the Baal Shem Tov in the Jewish world is the concept that there is ashgacha pratis even on individual animals. Up until then, the usual opinion that held sway among most Jewish philosophers and whatever is that there's hashgacha pratis on human beings, but as far as the animal kingdom, there's only hashgacha klolis on the general species, that it shouldn't go extinct, etc., or when Hashem decides that it should go extinct, that it does, but not on each individual member of the species. The Baal Shem Tov came and taught that there's hashgacha pratis even individually on the individual member of the species. The Rambam mentioned this idea in Moreh Nevuchim, but rejects it. The Rambam mentions in Moreh Nevuchim that there are some philosophers who hold of that concept, but the Rambam says no. Alpi Torah, he says there's Ashkacha Pratis on human beings and there's Ashkacha Klolis on Bali Chaim. So came the Baal Shem Tov and said that no. So now so you have a proof from our Gemara, from Rashi's first explanation on the Gemara over here about the Sholoch, that Hashem decides individually that this fish is going to live and this fish is not going to live, and therefore Hashem sends the Sholoch. So therefore, that's a proof.
You have
it's in Moreh Nevuchim. I can't find it. I don't know where it is right now, but I don't know. I didn't say he doesn't believe in Ashgacha.
For the animals?
For the animals. He holds that. That's what he holds. That's what he holds. That's what many other Gedolim B'Tovim held. But there's a Baal Shem. I don't know who else. Whatever. This isn't a class in Jewish philosophy. It's a class in Gemara. Okay. The fact of the matter. It's not a Baal Shem. But be that as it may, the point is the Rambam held that way, and many others did also, and it was a chiddush of the Baal Shem Tov that it's not that way, that there is Hashgacha. You think of it as like, of course it has to be that way, because we grow up learning this Torah of the Baal Shem Tov. Eventually it became accepted by everybody. But before that, it was a radically new idea. Anyway, the Marashah says another explanation also, that the vote is that the ant, Hashem's tzedakah to it, by giving it the intelligence to prepare its food in the summertime when there's food available, so that way it has what to live on over the winter. And then on the other hand, the judgment on the fish is in Tehoim Rabba, not maybe that the Shalach itself dives into Tehoim Rabba, but the fish live in Tehoim Rabba, and Hashem's judgment extends over them. All right.
And I suspect that Hashem gave the these animals enough intelligence so they don't overeat and kill themselves.
But also true, I guess, yeah.
No, okay. Not like that.
This is also true. All right. Omer Amemer. Okay. Okay, no, come on. Omer Amemer. Omer Amemer. Amemer says, here's some more dinim about birds. Lakni or Basni Shalyan, the birds that are called Lakni and Basni, you're allowed to eat. What those are, I don't know, but there's some kind of birds. Shaknoi or Batnoi, on the other hand, when it comes to the bird called Shaknoi and the bird called Batnoi, where there are possibilities. So I think one explanation I've seen is that Shaknoi might be a pelican. Anyway, whatever it is, Mokam Shinogu Lechel Oichlin, in places where they have the minhag to eat them, they can eat them. Mokam Shinogu Shaloi Lechel Ein Oichlin, in places where they don't have the minhag to eat them, they can't eat them. What do you mean? Since when does it depend on minhag? If it's a kosher bird, it's kosher. If it's not kosher, it's not kosher. Where does minhag come in there? The answer is Ein, yes. It does actually depend on minhag, but why? The loy kasha, there's no contradiction, there's no problem with it, because it depends. Ha ba'asra de shchichi peres va'aznia, ha ba'asra de loy shchichi peres va'aznia. It depends whether you're in a place where the peres and the aznia live. The peres and the aznia, we learned in the Gemara yesterday, are two birds on the list of non-kosher birds, where we said that they only have one simen tara. We said maybe the other way around, they only have one simen toma, whatever it is. Anyway, the point is, So Rashi explains, if you have places where the peres and the osnia are known to live, then you can't eat this shaknoi or batnoi over there, because they also only have one simen tara, so therefore they might be a subspecies of peres or a subspecies of osnia. On the other hand, in places where the peres and the osnia aren't found, then they're mutter, because then we were not going to assume that the shaknoi and batnoi are subspecies of them. That's how Rashi learns. Tosfos has a problem with that. Because, what do you mean? If they're a subspecies of Peres and Osnia, yeah, wherever they are, they should be also, exactly. So Tosfos says, no, what it is in places where the Peres and the Osnia are common, we answer these, the minhag developed to answer these birds because they're similar in appearance to the Peres and the Osnia, and if you're allowed to eat these, you may mix up and also eat the actual Peres and Osnia themselves. As opposed to in places where the Peres and the Osnia anyway are not commonly found, then they don't have to worry about that. They're going to confuse these with non-kosher species, and therefore they're able to eat them. That, by the way, is negei ala halacha as far as other things. So as far as birds, ultimately we eat them based on a masorah, as we're going to learn later on. But actually in different places they have different masorahs on birds, and to some extent, some of those differences in the Sarda depend on were there other birds in that area that are similar in appearance that are not kosher or that are similar in name even, you know. I mean, nowadays you have scientific naming, which is a principle everybody all over the world uses, but in the olden days you didn't have that. So in different places you have different birds that might be called by the same name or vice versa, just the same bird that's called by different names or whatever, and there was always a possibility of confusion. Same thing with fish, by the way, also. You have a similar thing as far as fish, okay? You don't need a masorah for fish, all you need is fins and scales, but you have, for the same reason only, we get in the next couple of blocks, fish. We'll talk about, you have the same issue with them sometimes, that you have fish that in one place are called by a certain name, and in a different place they're called by another name, and then therefore, if a person who comes from a certain place where they eat a certain fish, and then he goes to another place where they use that same name for a different fish, you can easily have a problem over there, because that other one might not be kosher. So here it was a similar kind of... No, but that's the point. In other words, if you're used to, like, think of it. If you're used to eating tuna fish, for example, you don't check whether it has fins and scales. No, and it has scales.
You know it has.
But in other words, and imagine if you went someplace else where they use the name tuna, where they use the name tuna for catfish, let's say, then you're gonna have a problem. You're gonna think, hey, they're serving tuna. It's kosher, and you're not gonna realize that, you know.
Quickly make the difference.
The point being, in other words, that you have a similar kind of thing. When you have similar looking or similar named species, so therefore that can be the issue with these places over here.
Why did Hashem make it so easy for fish and so difficult for birds? I'd like to know.
It's a good question. I don't know. Okay. Let's go on. Okay. Omer Abaya says, here's some more dinim about birds that are or aren't kosher. Kavoi v'kakvoi asiri. The birds called kavoi and kakvoi are also to eat. But kakvasa shaya, but the bird called kakvasa is mutter to eat. Even though they have similar names, again, this is how you tell.
Right.
And the Gemara points out, regarding that last one, the kakvasa, in Eretz Yisrael, they held its author even to the extent that a person could get malchus for eating it, v'kardolo kakvasa, and they had a different name for it. Instead of calling it kakvasa, they had a different name for it, kakvasa. Well, yeah, I guess. Okay. Well, they didn't necessarily...
To make up your point,
I guess that's it. Yeah. So maybe that's it, since they saw that people are coming from Babel and assuming that it's Mutter because they're used to the names, and then maybe they changed the name. Could be.
Right.
All right. More on the birds that are listed in the Torah. Tananabam, we learn in a Braisa. Kinshemeth, now you have like this. There's twice in, it's okay, you have, let's remember, we're working over here mostly with Parshas Shmini, where it has the list of the non-kosher birds, and then after that it talks about the kosher locust. After that, a few psukim later, it talks about the Shemona Shrotim, eight smallish creatures that when they're dead, their dead bodies are matame a person if he touches them. The Shemona Shrotim, Acholad Bar Achbar Bar Sov Lemineu. Again, what the identities of them we're not completely sure of, but they seem to include a toad and a couple of different kinds of lizards and a Acholad actually is something like a mole or a weasel or something, but a mole or a weasel or something, and Achbar is maybe a rat, Atsub is maybe a toad or a turtle, Naka is apparently some kind of lizard, whatever. Anyway, the point is that they're all creatures that whose bodies are very low to the ground, so therefore they're in the category called Shrotim. And out of all those creatures whose bodies are close to the ground, there are eight particular ones that are metame a person when they're dead, as opposed to all the other ones, like the frogs and snakes and worms and whatnot, are not metame at all. You're not allowed to eat them, but they're not metame a person if you touch them.
You touch a snake, you're not
metame. If a person touches a dead snake, he's not metame. Okay. The point is that in the list of non-kosher birds, you have one called the Tinshemeth, and in the Shemona Shrotim, you also have a creature called Tinshemeth. So what are those creatures? So, Tanan Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, Tinshemeth is Ba'os Sheba'ofos. The Tinshemeth is the Ba'os among the birds. So what does Ba'os mean? So you have a few explanations. Rashi just says it means one of those birds that cries out at night, some kind of owl. Rashi translates it as some kind of owl. You have a couple of other explanations, including one. Marshall says that Ba'os means like disgusting, mo'os. So it means like the disgusting looking one among the birds. So that's what a tinshemeth is. Again, Rashi translates that as some kind of owl. You have Tosfos discusses over here, and other Mefarshim discuss that it might actually be a bat. Okay. Anyway, after I'm a ba'os shavayfus, so you're telling me that the tinshemeth is the ba'os among the birds. A bat or an owl or a bat, as the case may be. Oy ena el boiz shebashrotim. How do you know? Again, there's a sheriff named Tinshemeth. Maybe the Tinshemeth in the list over there is actually the creature, the land creature called that. No, Amarta, you say like this. Seil mad mi yudgimel midas shatona dreshes behen. You can learn based on the yudgimel midas shatona dreshes behen. One of them is davar halomin minyone, that you learn something from the context in which it says, bama kos of medaber, what is the pasuk talking in these stukim that mention the first time the tinshemeth? Ba'ofos, it's talking about birds, flying creatures. Afkan ba'ofos, therefore the tinshemeth also has to be some kind of flying creature, an owl or a bat, but not a mole. Not a sheriff, a mole is what I was going to say soon. Yeah. Okay. Taninami.
That's the mole.
Sheriff, the definition of a sheriff is a creature that has very smallish legs, and therefore when it walks around, when it runs around, it looks like it's crawling or scurrying. You know, a mole has four legs, but it looks like it's crawling or scurrying because its body is set very low to the ground. So that kind of thing is a category of its own in the Torah called a sheretz. Rashi, in a few places, mentions that the word sheretz implies it's a low-slung creature that looks like it's crawling and like it's crawling along on the ground. So a mole is like that. So therefore, so the point is that the tinshemeth among the birds is that the tinshemeth listed among the birds is actually a bird, not some kind of land creature. And again, it is according to Rashi, it's an owl, and according to some other Rishonim, it might be a bat. Tanya nami gabi shrofin tahay gavna. You have a similar braisa, but the other way around as far as shrofin. Where again in the list of shrofin you have a creature called tinshemeth. And that is Bo'os Shebashrotin, the Bo'os among the Shrotin. So Rashi explains, Rashi translates it by a word that means a mole. And after I'm a Bo'os Shebashrotin, so you're telling me that it is the Bo'os among the Shrotin, O'enel a Bo'os Shebashrotin, because maybe the word Tinshemeth over there means the one among the birds. Maybe it means, in other words, that a dead Tinshemeth, a dead owl or bat, would be Matame a person when he touches it. No, Amar, same thing. Amar to say Lamad, Yud Gimel Midas Shatron of Yashas Behem. You learn based on Yud Gimel Midas. Dover Alom and Min Yonai. Lamah Kos and Medaber. What is the Pasuk talking in those Sukkim that mention the eight creatures? Beshrotim. It's talking about all the other ones are Shrotim, low-slung creatures. Afkan Beshrotim, therefore the Tinshemeth in that context is also a Sheret, namely a mole.
You could have thought it's not that.
It's the same as the Tinshemeth from the birds. But the Dover Alom and Minyan tells you that not. Okay. Amar Abaya says further in this connection, Bo'os Sheba'ofis Kipof, the Bo'os among the birds is what we call Kipof. So here it's not two different Mephoshim. Rashi himself says that one explanation is that Kipof is an owl, and the other explanation, Rashi says, is that it means a bat. Which in that case, the saying that it's a bat has the advantage of then it's more similar to the mole among land animals. They have a certain superficial similarity. They're both basically blind. They don't have functional eyes, or at least barely functional, whatever. Bats use radar, moles use, I don't know what they use, but their sense of smell, I guess, whatever. So therefore,
they don't see the moles.
That's the point. They see, they don't see, or they barely see, or whatever, because they spend their whole lives underground, whatever. Anyway, so therefore, so Rabbiya says that the Bo'os among the birds is the Kipof, which means, again, according to Rashi, either an owl or a bat. Bo'os Shebashrotim, and among the Shrotim, what is this Bo'os Shebashrotim that we're identifying as the Tinshemeth? Korpadoi. That would be the creature that in Aramaic they call Korpadoi, which again, Rashi says means a mole. I think you have some Rishonim who say that it might be a hedgehog.
And Kipof is a bat?
Kipof, Rashi said, means either an owl or a bat.
Okay.
Yeah. Tosfos actually points out there are other Gemaras that mention a Kipof as well, that it seems Tosfos says that in different contexts you have, just like the word Tinshemeth itself can mean either some kind of flying creature or some kind of land creature. We're saying it means an owl or a bat, and it also means a mole among land animals the same way. Tosfos points out in a similar way that the word Kipof itself also has a couple of different possible meanings. It can mean some kind of owl. It can mean something in the monkey family, a monkey or an ape or something like that. But obviously that's not the Kipof that we mean over here. Okay. Fine. Okay. Let's talk about the identities of some more of the birds that are mentioned in the Sukkim over there in Parshas Shemini. Amar Rav Yehuda, Ka'as Zu HaKuk. The word, the bird that's called in the Sukkim over there, Ka'as, is the bird that in their times they called cook or kick, it says on the side. I don't remember what the English name for it would be. Racham Zushrak. The cook or kick, whatever, yeah. Racham Zushrakrak, and the bird that the Torah calls Racham is the bird that in our language, that in Aramaic they call Shrakrak. Again, what the racham is, you also have a few different explanations. It might be some kind of vulture. It might be a creature. It might be a type of bird that in English is called a roller. Here, let's see. Actually, the ka'os. Okay, some identify this as a little owl. Another other possibilities are the pelican or the cuckoo. Anyway, so those are all possible ones. When he says over here, kos zuhakuk, could mean one of those. Racham zushrakrak, and again, what a shrakrak is, there's a couple of different possibilities. It might be an Egyptian vulture, or it might be a bird called a roller. Okay, whatever. Amr of Yechon, lama nikra shmoi racham, why is that bird called racham? Because kibin shabo racham bo rachamim la'olam. Because when the racham comes, then rachamim, then rain, which is rachamim from Hashem, comes. And in fact, Marshall says, practically speaking, they could see this is it's a migratory bird, so they can see every year when it comes to Eretz Yisrael around the season. When it comes to Eretz Yisrael is when the rainy season starts. So like sort of it heralds that the rain is coming. And that works out especially well if it's this bird called a roller, because those in fact are migratory and they do come to Eretz Yisrael around September, October time. Okay, Amar Bibi Barbaya, Ruhudi Yosef, Amidi V'Obid Shrakrak. This that we're saying, that it presages that rain is coming, is only if this racham bird sits on something, where usually it doesn't. It flies or it perches on trees or whatever, but if it sits on something, the ovid shrakrak, and it makes a shrakrak noise, then it means that it's presaging, that it's predicting sort of that rain is going to come. Ugmiri, and we also have the Kabbalah, the E Yosef Arab Sharif, that if it were to sit on the ground, then Rashi actually stresses, first of all, on the ground, which is unusual for it to perch there anyway. Again, usually it approaches in a tree or something high, but second of all, not only that it's on the ground, but Rashi stresses that it sits, like it doesn't stand with its legs erect. It sits down, kind of. It crouches on the ground. That if it does that, the shardik, and it makes this shardik noise, also Mashiach, then Mashiach will come. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Eshrik Olahem Va'akab Tem. You have a pasuk in Zechariah. I will whistle for them, and I will gather them. Hashem, so to speak, says, I'll whistle to signal the Jewish people to come home from Galus, and they'll come. So therefore, this bird, the shrakrak, when it makes a noise like that, the shrakrak, which is related to the word Eshrika, then it shows, and it's doing it sitting on the ground, then it shows that Mashiach is on his way.
So they heard the noise while it was not sitting on the ground.
Right. So that's the point. Then Marshall says, in other words, they saw as a practical matter that when it sits on something but not on the ground and makes noise, it means that rain is on the way. And they had the Kabbalah that if it were to sit on the ground and do that, then Mashiach would come.
Miri
means we learned. So it means they had a Kabbalah from their teachers. Wasn't there a case of a racham bird like that? That was sitting in on a plowed field, the sharak, and it made the shrakrak sound. And instead of Mashiach coming, the also goal after Kelamoche, and a stone fell down from heaven and broke open its head and killed it. So what do you mean that if it sits on the ground and it whistles and then it makes this noise, then it means Mashiach is coming? And this particular one did that and then got killed by a stone. Amalei hahu baida hava. The answer is, Mar Bar Avidoi answers, that one was a liar. It just the opposite. Rashi says it lied. It did this shrakrak in this way as if Mashiach is coming, but it's not really. It wasn't the right time. And so he was faking, and therefore Hashem punished him by having a stone fall and kill him. Rabbi Negoshim gives a different explanation. Baida means it wasn't an actual racham; it was some other bird that resembled a racham, but because it was faking it, so it was pretending to be one. So therefore, deeper meanings behind this. You have a number of interesting explanations. And the Maharal has a long detailed explanation about it in his Sefer Netzach Yisrael, which is all about the Geula and all about the process that leads towards Geula. So he deals with this Gemara, and he explains that to summarize, he talks about you have certain creatures that are more attuned and more sensitive to various things in the world. I mean, we know in the Gashmiistic world, for example, we know that there are certain creatures that are more sensitive to earthquakes than human beings, and others that are more sensitive to smells or sights or whatever. So the Racham is particularly sensitive to certain things, rain being one of them, and the other thing being to the rachamim that comes to the world with the coming of Mashiach. So therefore, he develops the idea also that this bird sitting on the ground and making a shrakrak sound, he talks about the shrak, the letters shin reish and kuf they're near the end of the Aleph days, so therefore the union of them together has to do with like the gathering together everything that needs to be the final gathering together of everything that needs to be united, and it's also the same letters as Kesher, like being bound together. This last one over here was a liar. Instead of Kesher, it was Sheker. So therefore he got his punishment. But the idea being that if he's doing that, he's the Racham, being more sensitive to the coming of Mashiach than other creatures, and therefore he'd be the one to herald it by
says?
No, not Rashi. This is Maral says it.
That's
what the Gemara says it over here. The Gemara says that if it sits on the ground and makes a shrak wraps down, then it means Mashiach is coming. There's other explanations also, including another interesting one, goes along the idea that working backwards in the Aleph Beis, you're going from Tuf, which is 400, back to Aleph, which is 1, so therefore going backwards through the Aleph Beis, like in this case, Shin, Reish, Kuf, to spell out the word Shorak, represents the idea of like of greater Achdus among the Jewish people, taking all the different multiplicity and bringing it back towards the One. And therefore, when you see that that's happening, you see that spreading in the world, then you know Mashiach is coming.
So it's the opposite of Sheker.
So in that sense, it's the opposite of Sheker, right? I mean,
it probably also
has to do with what I talked about in Bosu Vagani about Keresh and Sheker, that you're supposed to take the Sheker of the world and turn it into a Keresh for the Mishkan. It's probably somehow related to that also, yeah. Okay. We learn in a braisa like this. Let's talk about more birds that are mentioned in the Sukkim over there. The bird that the Pasuk calls Orev, this is the Orev, what we know as the Orev.
So we said it was Tosfos.
By the time of Tosfos, they weren't completely sure whether it's a raven or a jackdaw or some other thing. But in the time of the Gemara, apparently they knew. Es kol ha-Orev, when it says, the actual Pasuk says, Es kol Orev l'minoi, or the Orev according to its kind. So therefore, the word eskol means to add something else. Therefore, lahavi Orev ha'imki, that comes to include also the Orev imki, which is another subspecies of Orev. Lamino lahavi Orev ha'babi rasha yonim. And the word lamino comes to include an Orev, a raven, or a crow, or whatever, that has a head that looks like a duck. So these are all different types of Orev, and they're all included. When the Pasuk says Ace Kol Orev Aminoi, it comes to include all of them.
So I'm just like a bird, an Orev, it looks like a dove.
I haven't seen that many birds before. I'm not an ornithologist, but
you've seen a raven.
Yeah, okay, I've probably seen them. I don't know, but I haven't really paid attention what the shape of their head is like. But whatever, one explanation is that the Orev Imki might be a magpie, and the Orev Abab Rosh Yonim could be a jay. Like a European jay or blue jay or what have you. Yeah. Okay, whatever.
Say in England, the real raven is the one in the Tower of London.
Could be. Okay.
Big bird.
Those I know, sorry. All right, anyway. Okay, on the side over here, it brings a different gear set. The reef has a gear set as follows. The word Orev refers to a black raven. Eskol Orev refers again to this Orev Ha'imki and the Orev Ha'babar Ashayonim. And Lamino includes the Zarzir, and Laminehu means the Snunus Lavana. We learned yesterday that you have two other kinds of birds. The Zarzir, which is the Zarzir, which is a swallow, and Rashi translates it as a swallow, and then Snunus Lavana. Rashi translated Snunus as a swallow, and we translated Zarzir as, what do we translate it as? Starling. Starling, yes. Okay, anyway, that's the Rish Gear says that we're including those as well. Okay.
Well,
okay. It can be beautiful, but it's not kosher. Fine. Omamar. Okay, let's analyze the braisa. Orev ze orev. We said that orev refers to the orev. What do you mean ze orev? Otu kamon koi? Is the orev in front of us that we can say orev ze orev as if like we're pointing to it? And the point of the question is, because we just said there's a number of different subspecies of orev, so how can you just say orev means orev plain? Yeah. Ela ema orev the orev ochma. So rather, correct the braisa and say as follows: the word orev plain means the black orev, the black crow or raven. And we know that a raven is canonically black. The basic kind of raven is black. L'chein oimer kvutzoisa taltalim shchores ka'orev. You have a pasuk in Shir Hashirim. And then the comparisons, and then the moshul over there that the girl is saying about her beloved, and then in the nimshul that the Jewish people are saying about Hashem, that his locks of hair are in rings that are black like a raven. So we see that the pasuk describes a raven as like a classic example of black. Kvotsoitzav means his locks of hair. Taltalim are like locks, like ringlets. Shchordes ka'ordev, black like a raven. The simple meaning of it. So the point is that an over the black. Imki, what is an ordev imki? That is chivra. That is an ordev that is, well, chivra means white, but actually the Ramban on the sugya brings a popular expression that the gist of it is there's no such thing as a white raven. So he explains it means completely white. It means it has patches of white on it.
It's mostly black,
but it has patches of white. The chen hu oimu umareu omos mina or, thus we find that you have by tzaraas. It describes that you have tzaraas. You can have a spot of tzaraas that looks deeper than the skin. And what does that mean? It's not actually deeper. It means kamare chamaha mukum mina sel, like the way a spot of sunlight looks deeper than the shaded area around it. The same way, in other words, this bird, which is mostly black but has white spots or white patches on it, those white patches look deeper than the black area. So in that sense, we're calling it imki, which means deep. It was an omrik.
Deep spots.
And they're not literally actually deeper. If you were to feel them, they're the same. They're exactly the same as the rest of the body of the bird. But they look deeper. They look at a casual, because in other words, sometimes you have a white against the black background looks deeper. It looks like a deeper area. And the Odev Habobar Rosh Yonim, what do we mean, Odev Habobar Rosh Yonim? Omer HaPapa, so literally, Habobar Rosh Yonim literally sounds like it means it comes at the head of the doves. So what does that mean? Omer HaPapa, Lotema De'osi V'Rosh Yonim, don't think that it means that you'll have a flock of doves flying, and then you'll have one of these ovim leading the flock. That could be Berosha Yonim. That's not what it means. Ella the dummy ratio of the Yonah. Rather, what it means is a type of crow, where a type of raven, whatever it is, where its head resembles the head of a dove.
The Yonah,
like the head of a dove. Oh, this that I was mentioning before, by the way, about the, I just noticed now, this that we were mentioning before about the peacock, about Rashi's identification of the Duchi fast over here, that Rashi identified it as a wild peacock, so that's on the side of it here, Hagois Mahari Lander, the Hagois of the Noda Behuda, that he makes that distinction that I was mentioning before, that only the wild one would be not kosher, but a sort of domesticated, the domesticated variety of peacock, according to Rashi, at least would be kosher, yeah. All right, turn it up on him. We learn in a bright.
Peacock is the bird that...
Peacock, you know, the, yeah, the one that spreads its tail, yeah. Famous one. Okay.
Blue,
Yeah, it has different colors and its tail, sure. Okay, turn it up on him. Let's talk about more of the birds that are mentioned in those psukim. Turn it up on him. Hanate, zehanate. The word nate means what we call nate, which is a hawk. We learned about nests at the beginning of the paragraph. We talked about...
No,
probably nothing to do. It's called a nest. I don't know. Why is any bird called what it's called? I don't know. All the birds are named.
An eagle and a nest.
And they're different birds. That's all. One's an eagle, one's a hawk. I don't know. I think you actually have some Mephoshim who say that possibly the nate might be what we know as an eagle. In other words, we said before, we learned a few days ago that the nesher is probably not the eagle, but maybe the nate is. Okay, whatever, anyway.
So the nesher is the hawk?
So according to that, no, the nesher would be some kind of vulture, Griffon vulture in particular, and then the nate could possibly be an eagle. Okay. Anyway, so hanate zehanate. Leminehu, and then again, by Nenate, it also says that the Nate Leminehu, so the word Leminehu is adding some other related species. Lahavi es Barchiria. That comes to include also a bird called Barchiria. My Barchiria. I'm going to buy a Shurinka. That's the bird that we know in Aramaic as Shurinka. So what is it? What is it in English? See over here one possibility that it might be something called a sparrowhawk. Okay. Wait, what? He calls it what in Germany?
A strangler.
A strangler? Okay, so it's a bird.
German strangler?
No, but that's in German. That's what the name of the bird is. Okay. Okay. Fine. So that's the Braisa, again, that you have a nate and you have a subspecies of nate. Tosfos points out, over here the Gemara doesn't ask like it did before about the odor. Well, what do you mean? We don't have a nate in front of us to identify it. What do you mean? Is there a nate? The reason is because you only have one kind of bird that's called nate. Before we said you have three different kinds of birds that are all called odor. Odor of plain, odor of inky, odor of abobard ashayonim. Over here you have, okay, there's the nate and there's the shrinker, but they have different names. One is a subspecies of the other, but you only have one of them is actually called nate. More on the list, Omer of Yehuda, HaChassida Zudaya Levana. The Chassida in the Pesukim over there, in the list of non-kosher birds, is the Daya Levana. Many Rishonim say that that is a stork. On the other hand, there were actually places where they had a Masorah that storks are kosher. Rabbeinu Yerucha mentions it in his Sefer. The Rosh has a tshuva about it, where he says that people asked him about it. Are we allowed to eat it, given that we have a masoda? And the Rosh says, look, you know, if you have a place where they have a masoda, fine. I guess we're not going to tamper with it. But to go so far as to say that people who have a more superior masoda, and he mentions, for example, Bnei Ashkenaz, where he says that our masoda goes uninterruptedly back to the time of the Churban, as opposed to people from other parts of the Jewish world, not necessarily, so that we should accept their masoda and say that we could eat it, not necessarily. So fine, we won't interfere with their masoda, although the Rosh says we really have to question where they got it from. Maybe that somebody checked the bird, found that it has some simone tara and was not there. That's no proof.
One second, we're saying that Ashkenazim have a masoda.
The Rosh writes that the Ashkenazim have a masoda that goes back, ishmi piish, back to the time of the Churban.
The stork?
Not specifically about the stork, but in general, about limudat Torah, about learning and understanding the Torah. The Rosh says that the masoda of Ashkenaz is superior to the masodas of many other places, including, he implies in the Struva, to the masodas of Spain. The Rosh himself lived in Germany most of his life. Then he was forced to escape from there, and he moved to Spain, but in the Struva, he's implying, basically, that the masodas of Ashkenaz, where he's native to, are superior to the masodas of Spain. Because they have more of a pedigree behind them, he's saying. Well, that's what he's saying. He knew what he was talking about. All right, let's go on.
He agrees, according to the Rashba, that other people have a tradition to eat it, even though you don't have that tradition, you can rely on theirs.
So that's the Rashba holds that. The Rosh says in his Truva, no. The Rosh says it's one thing to allow them to eat it, fine. I mean, we should still question where they got this Masorda from. Is it maybe a wrongly founded Masorda? But to go so far as to say that we, Bnei Ashkenaz, who have a superior Masorda, that we should go and accept theirs, no.
So one second, this Masorda is just for the stork, or it's for anything?
No, we're talking about, the Rosh is talking more generally, but in this particular Truva, he's talking about the stork.
I understand.
Yeah.
When he says
the Masorda, he means more generally. Yeah.
And Masorda?
The Pashtus, that's what he means, yeah. Okay, let's go on. Okay, so the Chassidus of Daya Levana. I can find this. I don't have it right now in front of me, but I can find it later. Loma Nikos Shmo Chassida. Why is this bird called Chassida? Sha'oyse Chesed im Chavreis. Sha'oyse Chassidus im Chavreis. Because it does kindness with its fellow birds. It shares its food with them. There's a famous verse that says on that in that case, and usually we have the reason, there's a famous explanation that says that the reason why Hashem acted us certain animals and birds and whatever is because they have bad natures and we don't want to absorb that. What's wrong with the Hasidah if it seems it has a good nature? A famous answer is that it's only Oitza Chassidus in Chavrei Seha. Only with friends does it do Chesed. But with other birds or ones that are not in a circle, not so much. Then it's greedy. So that's not the answer. Okay.
By the way,
it brings Zionist, but doesn't bring Marshman.
good. All right. Here it says Chassidus, so that would work with that. He says, sure.
Yeah,
okay.
A stork is black and white.
Okay, so that's what we're saying. Daya Levana, yeah. Okay, so it would be that.
Daya
Levana means that. Okay, it means that it's partially white. I don't know. Whatever.
Black and white.
Most of it is white than black.
No, that's not the one we use.
That's a stork, and then it's mostly white. Okay.
You know, in Alsace, they have stork nests. Every summer, the stork is a national bird over there.
Okay.
They come and they fertilize their eggs, and they all over the place.
Okay. So.
But usually they're black.
Okay,
and part of them is white.
Okay, and so maybe mature ones are more white. I don't know.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
They have nests like shrimals.
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
The next one on the list, Ha'anotha, the next one on the list in the Torah, is a bird called Ha'anotha, Zugdaya Ragzonis. This is the angry Gaia. Mm-hmm. In other words, the Hasidah is a calm type of bird. The Anotha is an angry bird.
What's
a heron, it's usually translated as. Loma Nikos Shmo Anofa. Why is it called Anofa? Shemana Efes in Chavreisel, because it's angry with its fellow birds. Rashi explains, Shemana Efes, you would think in Russian Neo, like being Mazane. Rashi says that no, it's actually Mir Anefes, it's supposed to be, that in other words, gets angry, like it's Anafmi.
Normally,
so in other words, if it's a bird that gets angry, that's what usually angry. If it was promiscuous, you would say Shemana Efes, which is how we have it printed. Shemana Efes, as we have it in the Gemara in front of us. That's, we have it in the Gemara in front of us. But it says, in the Gemara printed in front of us, it says Shemana Efes. But if you look at Hagoyis Abbas on the side, he changes it, Shemana Efes. And Rashi also explains that that's what it means. It doesn't mean that's promiscuous. It means that it gets easily angered with its fellow birds, with its fellow herons.
Okay. Not after they have the art before the learn, the other way,
right, that's the point. All right, so now that we've gone through identifying many of the birds in the psukim, so now let's talk about the more general topic of the non-kosher birds. Omer of Chonan bar of Chista, Omer of Chista, Omer of Chonan bar Rava, Omer Rav. Estrim va ba opus tmeinheim. There are actually 24 species of non-kosher birds. Now,
all this analysis becomes a bit...
Yeah, so now, so Rav Chanan Baruch Chista had said this in the name of Rav Chista, who in turn said in the name of Rav Chanan Baruch, who in turn said in the name of Rav. So now, the last two in that chain, Rav Chanan Baruch Chista asked Rav Chista, the pastor was his father, he asked him, where do you have 24? Jehecha, where do you have 24? Now remember, the list of birds is in Chumash Vayikra, in Parshas Shmini, and it's repeated again with minor variations in Devarim, in Parashat Sura A. So where in either of those lists do you have 24? Id Vayikra Esrim Habu. If you're looking in Vayikra, then you have 20. Id Mishnah Torah Esrim Mechad Habu. And if you look in Devarim, you have only 21. Where are you getting 24 from? V'chitema da'ad k'siva
v'vayikra.
That's the question. Well, because what do you mean? How do you account for the difference? You have a slightly different list than the two psukim. Let's grab a chumash and let's grab a chumash and we'll be. Okay. So here, in Parshas Shmini, we have as follows. You can count on your fingers as we go along. So these are the birds that you're not allowed to eat. Es ha-nesher, ve-es ha-peres, ve-es ha-oznia, ve-es ha-do'a, ve-es ha-aya l'mina, es kol-orev l'minai, ve-es ba-sayana, ve-es ha-tachmos, ve-es ha-shochach, ve-es ha-neis l'mineihu, so far we're 10, ve-es ha-kois, ve-es ha-sholach, ve-es ha-yanshu, ve-es ha-tid-shemes, ve-es ha-kos, ve-es ha-rocham, ve-es ha-chasidah, ha-anofo l'mina, ve-es ha-duchifas, ve-es ha-talos. 20. In Devarim, in Parashas Re'ei, this more or less the same list is given, but slightly differently. So let's read it. Here, the Zeh Shalot Tochel Mehem, Hanesher v'Haperes v'Haoznia, v'Haro'a v'Et Ha'aya v'Hadaya l'mina, v'Eis Kol Orei v'Minai, v'Eis Basayana v'Et Ha'Tachmas v'Et Ha'Shochav. There's a nate from Inehu, so far we have 11. There's a kois, there's a yadshu, shat in shomet, there's a kos, there's a rochoma, there's a sholoch, there's a chasida, there's a nof, there's a duchifas, there's a talis, 21. So the list is slightly different, which in particular we're going to talk about now. So that's the question. So where are you getting 24 from? V'chitema da'a d'ksiva v'vayikra v'loi k'siva v'mishnah Torah shad ya'alayu. So you're going to say, okay, when you look at the two lists and compare them, you have one bird mentioned in Vayikra called the Da'a. You don't have that same bird listed in Devarim. Instead, you have V'hara'a V'ha'aya V'hadaya L'mina. So you're going to say, okay, Da'a is another type. So then, okay, add that to the 21 in Devarim. I have to ask some entirety. A train have. Well, you're still only up to 22. Where are we getting 24? Your grandfather, which is Rav Chanan bar Rava, who was Rav Chista's father-in-law, so therefore he's Rav Chanan bar Chista's grandfather. Your mother's father, your grandfather, said in the name of Rav, Lamina, 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 Laminehu, Hare Kan Arba, because you also have to add by some of the birds, it adds the word Lamina, or Lamina, or Laminehu. For example, in Vayikra, you have, it says, that's Aya Lamina, so that adds, besides the Aya, you have some subspecies of Aya. The Eis Kol Orev Lamina, so you have another mean of Orev.
No,
so then you have four more. Four times it says Lamina or Lamina. four altogether. So the question is, in Akati, in that case, Ihochi Esther Meshikabu, in that case, you're 26. So where are we getting 20?
21.
Okay, you have 21 in Devarim. Add to them the Da'a, which is mentioned in Vayikra, but not in Devarim.
Sorry,
and that gives you 22. Four times the Mino would give you 26.
Yeah.
So where are you getting 24 from?
You have to take it away.
Amar Abaya, Da'a v'ra'a achasi. The answer is that the Da'a mentioned in Vayikra and the Ra'a mentioned in Devarim are actually two names for the same bird. So therefore, we're down one. The Isakad Tauti, and you know that, and you know that they are, you know that they must be the same bird, because otherwise, Mechti Mishnah Torah Lo Istufi Hudasa. Because after all, the whole point, why is the Torah repeating the list in Devarim? It must be to add details, for the same way as we're going to say later on in the sugya that. We're going to say that you have the list of non-kosher animals, of non-kosher land animals, the ones that have only one simen, is repeated in Parshas Devar, in Parshas Re'e, after being said in Parshas Shemini. And we said the reason for that is, as the Gemara says later, the reason for that is in order to add the Shesua, which is not mentioned in Vayikra. So we said two possibilities. We had a Machlokas Rav, we just talked about a Machlokas Rav and Shmuel, whether a Shesua is Siamese twins, two animals conjoined together, or whether it's a different species of animal, which the Malbim thinks it might be an animal native to South America called a, the Malbim calls it Tayatu. Nowadays it's called Peccary. Anyway, whatever, the point is that so in Devarim, when it mentions the list of animals with only one simen, it mentions besides the four in Vayikra, it also mentions the word Hashsua, and we learn something from that. So the same way by the birds in Devarim, it must be coming to add something, not to take away. So given that Devarim is coming to add, Maishna Hacha Dichtiv Da'a, or Maishna Hacha Dichtiv Ra'a, V'lek Siv Da'a. So why would it say Da'a in Vayikra, and then not say Da'a in Devarim, and only say Ra'a? So therefore, the Ra'a and the Da'a must necessarily be the same thing. The Torah calls it by one name in Vayikra and by a different name in Devarim.
Well, why?
Because we're going to see later on the Amud. We're going to see later on the Amud why. Gemara is going to explain why. But the Pashtos, it is a very common thing in some places that we find that a name that in some places it was a Dalet, in other places it was a Resh. We have an example of it, for example, with the Nasiim. The Nasi of Shevet God is usually called El Yosef Ben Di'uel. But in one place, in Pashtos Bamidbar, he's called El Yosef Ben Ri'uel.
So they forgot they didn't.
They didn't forget nothing. The Torah is accurate. There's a reason, and the Pashtos explain that there's a reason why. The reason is because Du'el means know Hashem, and Ru'el means somebody who thinks about Hashem. So therefore, the point is, so later on, we're going to see why the Pasuk mentions them, why the Pasuk mentions this bird with different names. But I'm saying, on a chaff level, sometimes you have a name that in some places you find with a Dalet and other places with a Resh, because they are, after all, similar-looking letters, and therefore, sometimes they can be used to a certain extent interchangeably. Another example of it, of which there was also a Drasha for, fine, but another example is that in Parashat Noach, when it lists all the nations, it said that all the 70 nations, it mentions a nation called Dodonim, Bnei Yav and Elisha v'Tarshish Kitim v'Dodonim, then in Divrei Hayamim, it repeats the list, and it calls them Roidonim instead. So there you have, such things. So therefore, so Ra and Da are the same thing. Okay, but Akati Chofei Havu. Okay, so then fine. You got one down. You still have 25. Why are you saying 24? Amar Abaya, Sabaya says like this. Kishem Shara of Da Akati. Just as we've just established, that Ra and Da are the same bird. Kach Ayah V'daya Akati. The same thing. When the pasuk says in Devarim and in Re, V'ha Ra'a V'etho Ayah V'ha Daya L'mina, Ayah and Daya are actually two names for the same bird. Same thing.
Ayah
and Daya are two names for the same bird. Again, you have in Re, it mentions both of them back-to-back. It says V'etho Ayah V'ha Daya L'mina. Because it means two different names for the same thing. Whether you call it Aya or whether you call it Daya, it and all of its subspecies are also. In Shmini, it only mentions one of them. Again, it only mentions Ha'aya. Same idea, in other words, that in Devarim it's coming to add, it's coming to tell us new details that were not written before in Parshas Shmini. So therefore, in Shmini it only calls it Aya. and in Devarim, and in Re'e, it calls it Daya, it calls it Ayah and Daya. So therefore, so you're back down to 24. And the reason is, how do we know again that they're the same? The Esaf said Tauti Inun, because if you're going to argue Ayah and Daya are two different birds, then Nechti, Mishnah Torah, is Sufa Hodasa. Again, everything in Devarim is meant to add to what's in Vayikra. It's not meant to replace it. It's not meant to subtract from it. Maishna Hocha Bechtiv Lamino Ayah. So why in Shmini, when does it say Ve'etha Ayah Lamina? It mentions the word Lamina in connection with the Ayah. And Maishna Hocha Bechtiv Lamina Adaya. Whereas in Re'e, it says the word Lamina regarding the Daya. The pasuk in Re'e is Vaharra'a Ve'etha Ayah Vahadaya Lamina. So it takes the word Lamina and puts it not regarding the Ayah, but regarding the Daya. So why would it be? Obviously, you can't say that the Lamina of Ayah is included in Shmini and should be excluded in Re'e. There's no logical reason to do that. Re'e is supposed to be telling us more than what's in Shmini. Obviously, therefore, Ayah and Daya must be two names for the same bird.
Otherwise, there's no reason to take
the word Lamina and move it from the Ayah to the Daya. So the reason why it's called by two names is same idea as why you have the Ra and the Daya and the Da. Later on the Amud, the Gemara explains, Rashi brings it over here. The reason is, in case you could have somebody arguing, well, hey, I'm allowed to eat this bird. The Torah only said that the Da is also, didn't say anything about the Ra. This bird is called Ra. I should be allowed to eat it. Comes Parshas Re, comes Chumash Devarim and tells you no, also Ra. Whether you call it Da, whether you call it Ra, either way it's also. Same thing with Ayah and Daya. Not to give any excuse for people to be able to claim.
So
we're back down to 24. So again, we start.
But with this principle, everywhere the Torah cites a bird that has two names, it should give them two names.
The Torah can give one name in one place and another name in another place, and that's fine.
Because those are the two names most likely to be.
Yeah.
The,
yeah, as a matter of fact, I mean, we're going to continue in the Gemara over here and talk about more possibilities of the identities of these birds and then which ones are identical with others and not. I mean, Rashi brings on the pasuk a similar thing that you have. Rashi learns on the pasuk that the ra'a and the ayah and the daya are all the same thing. And therefore, again, that the Shalai listen about in Lach, like, so you can't claim, well, I call it by a different name, and therefore. So according to Rashi, actually, which is based on our Gemara over here, although I guess a different gear, sir, or something, as we'll see as we go along, all three ones mentioned in that pasuk are the same name. So there it's all three in the same. Okay. Fine. So the question is, if you're telling me that Ayah and Daya are the same bird, so why does it say both of them together? In other words, Mela, to say that one of them it says in Vayikra, and then an additional detail is given in Devarim, that's not so hard to understand. But why should it mention the Ayah and the Daya back-to-back, both in Devarim? It should have been the same thing, that it says one of them in Vayikra, and then it says the other. The same way as the Ra'a versus the Da, where it says one of them in Vayikra and one in Devarim, the same thing should have been as far as the Ayah and the Daya. Once it said the Ayah in Vayikra, it should have said Daya in Devarim, and that's it. Why is it mentioning both of them together in Devarim?
And nothing in...
Only Ayah in Vayikra. The answer is Kiditanya, Rebbe Omer, like this, because we learn it in a bright, Rebbe Omer, Ekra ani Ayah, I could have read, the pasuk could have just told us the word Ayah, Daya lama nemra, why does the pasuk also mention the word, why does the pasuk also mention the name Daya, given that it's two names for the same creature? Kadeshali, Tikin Kishin Pela, Baldin Lachlik, in order not to give any excuse for somebody who might want to argue and claim that it's kosher, don't give him room to argue.
That's not answering the question.
That's the answer.
No, we're asking why it is true in one part of the Torah and
that's
one.
Fine. Once we have that we need to mention both of them, Shalilich and Pitz and Kala, Baldin Lachlik, it's not such a big deal if we have one of them in it's not
doing it instead of the Ra and
because otherwise we wouldn't know that it's the same one.
We wouldn't
because we would have in one place Ayah and in the other place Daya and we wouldn't realize that they're the same creature. Like the same way as you have other ones in the Pesukim that are out of order. You have certain ones that are in one order in Vayikra. In Vayikra, for example, you have Vesa Kois, Vesa Sholoch, Vesa Yanshuf, Whereas in Re'eh, you have a Sakoris versus a Yanshul fighting Shomer. So you're not going to say that Yanshul and Shemes are the same thing. Some of them are out of order in Devarim versus in Vayikra.
Right.
But you're not going to say that that means they're the same bird. So the same thing over here. If you had Aya in one and Daya in the other, you would think you wouldn't realize it's two names for the same bird. Shaloi to hey Asa Kore Aya, but who Kore Daya? This way, you don't have that you're calling bird Aya, whereas somebody else is going to claim, yeah, but it's called Daya, so it's not also. Or Asa Kore Daya will Kore Aya, or the other way around, that you're going to call it Daya, somebody else is going to call it Aya, and think that it's kosher. L'chach Kosa, the Mishnah Torah, v'ha'ra, v'ha'aya, v'ha'daya l'mina. Therefore, right there in Devarim, it says the Ra'a, and the Ra'a and the Aya and the Daya Lamina, and that makes it clear that the Aya and Daya, whichever one you call it, whether you call it Aya and Daya, whether you call it Aya or whether you call it Daya, either way it's still awesome. Tosfos does deal with the question a little bit of why we have one pair of them is in one and one and one and one in the other, whereas the other pair, Daya and Aya, are together in Devarim. Okay, fine. So Tosfos discusses it a little bit. Tosfos takes it up and says that what it is if you didn't have, or if you had, if by rights, all of these various names should be in Devarim. But if you did that, then you would think that because, and again, in Devarim, it's meant to add more details. Moshe Rabbeinu was giving this speech to the Jewish people in the last weeks of his life, so he has to add more details that might not have been clear.
So why he didn't add?
So that's the point. In other words, so when it comes to the Dar and the Ra, if you had them both listed back-to-back in Devarim, then you wouldn't realize that they're the same bird. You would think that they're two different birds. When it comes to the Aya and the Daya, the reason why we know they're the same bird is not because of their position in the list, but because the word Lamina, which is applied to one in one place and to the other in the other place, that tells us they're the same one. Therefore, it can put both of them in, because we take the word Lamina, which is put by the Aya in Vayikra, and it's moved to the Daya in Devarim, and there we're obviously not going to say that the mean of the Aya is also in Shmini, and then Moshe left it out in Devarim. That wouldn't be logical. So obviously it must be that Aya and Daya are the same thing, so they can both be mentioned in Devarim without us thinking they might be two different birds.
Lamina could be separate subspecies.
Lamina means that it has subspecies. Only four of these birds have subspecies. That's the point. In Vayikra it says that Aya has subspecies, which are Osir. In Devarim it does not say that. It just says Vasa Aya. Instead it says Vahadaya Lamina. So therefore that alone makes it clear that the Aya and Daya are the same thing. Therefore they can be given back to back in Devarim. Whereas Ra and Da, neither one of them has any Luminehu with it. So therefore, you wouldn't have a way to know that they're the same, that they're the same bird, unless you have one name in Vayikra and a different name in Devarim. That's Tosfos's point.
Because it says two Minas.
Because in the case of the Aya and the Daya, it's clear they're the same one because the word Lumina was moved from one to the other. So therefore, that means that they must be the same bird. The fact that they're both designated also with Lamina, that they have subspecies that are also. In the case of the Ra and the Daya and the Da, you have no such thing. There's no Lamina by either one of them.
No, I understand that. But why you say it's the same bird because it has Mina?
Because you wouldn't say that the Mina of the Aya is also in Vayikra, and then Moshe would have left it out in Devarim. But you're not going to do that. The whole point is Moshe is trying to tell us more details in Devarim, not less. So if it says that's the Aya Lamina in Vayikra, it can't say Ve'esa Aya without Lamina in Devarim, if it does, but it continues Vahadaya Lamina. It must be the Daya is another name for the Aya that was just mentioned. That's how we know that they're the same. Okay.
Just on the principle that we had more Devarim, more
right.
Devarim.
That's the point, right.
That's the issue.
So therefore, Mishnah Torah Ve'esa Aya Vahadaya Lamina. Mesir, the Gemara says, I have a contradiction to all of this discussion. A Braisa says, Lama Nishnu Bebehema, why were the land animals, the ones that have only one simen, why were they repeated in Devarim when they're already in Vayikra? Mipnesh Sua, as we just said, because there's a creature called, because of the Sua, over Ophis Mipnei HaRa'a. Why are they repeated with the birds? Because of the Ra'a. Implying my love mid behema de hosam lo isufi, shouldn't we assume that what means is because anything that's added in Devarim that wasn't in Vayikra is meant to be added. So since you have the only thing added by the land animals is the shtua, therefore that means what's extra. That's what's extra. Therefore we should assume oifus nami lo isufi. Therefore, we should assume every name of a bird that's listed in Devarim is meant to add, not just to clarify, what's in Vayikra. Therefore, in other words, we would say it's not only, therefore, we would say like this. You would have two new ones, therefore. You'd have the Ra'a, which is not mentioned in Vayikra. You would also have the Daya, which is not mentioned in Vayikra. The implication seems to be that everything that's added in Devarim is meant specifically to add some new species that you wouldn't have known from Shmi. So therefore, you have one new animal, the Stua, and two new birds, the Ra'a and the Daya. So we're back to, then we have 25. Because again, you have then that the, no, actually we would say you're back to 26. We were saying all this time that Ra'a is the same as the Da'a and the Aya is the same as the Daya. But the implication of this Braisa seems to be that they're actually separate birds.
Because you want to add
because we're adding more. Because we're adding more. Yes.
In Dvarim.
In Dvarim, right.
But they're separate.
So therefore they're separate. So then we're back to the question number 26. Yes.
Right.
The answer is loy. No, that's not what it means. Hasam loy sufi hachala farushi. No, when it comes to the animals, indeed the Shtua is telling us a new species or a new type that we wouldn't have had otherwise in Shmini. But when it comes to the birds, it's not adding new types. It's just clarifying the existing types. Informing us, you should know, the Da'a that was mentioned in Vayikra is also called Ra'a. And the Aya that was mentioned in Vayikra also has another name, Daya, and that bird, whether you call it Aya or Daya, has Lamina, has subspecies. So therefore, so that's the answer. It's not coming to add new birds. The Daya is no different than the Aya. The Ra'a is no different than the Da'a. They're just clarifying that you should know each of these birds has an extra name. So therefore, we still have that there's 24. Okay. Okay. Now, the Gemara says, please end it up above. Now, all of this discussion that we had so far this statement of Rav Chista's about that the Ra'a and that the Da'a and the Ra'a are the same thing, and the Aya and the Daya are the same thing, but in other words, there's two different birds that we're talking about. Rav Abohu disagrees with that concept because Rav Abohu holds that actually all four of these are names for the same bird. So it comes out, in other words, Rav Abohu would say that there's not 24. But there's not 24 minim. Rav Abohu would say that there's only 22.
He disagrees with that saying?
Or 23, rather. Yes. No. Rav Chista had said like this. The Ra'a is the same as the Da'a.
Right.
The Aya is the same as the Daya. So therefore, what you do is you have, so in other words, Rav Chista would say as follows. You have 21 names that are listed in Parashas Re'eh. And then you have four laminas. But two of the names that are listed in Devarim, Aya and Daya, are actually the same bird, therefore you're back down to 24. Rav Abohu would disagree with that. Rav Abohu would say that the Ra'a and the Aya and the Daya are all the same thing, and it's also called Da'a. In other words, this bird has four names. One name is given, two of those names are given in Vayikra. One of those names is repeated in Dvarim, along with three other names. So it would come out, according to Rav Abohu, that we would say like this. We would calculate like this. You've got 21 names in Devarim, and you've got four Laminos. So that gives you, on the face of it, 25. But subtract two of them, because Ra'a, Aya, and Daya, that I mentioned in Devarim, are all the same bird, and they're also all the same as Da'a from Vayikra. Therefore, according to him, you wind up with only 23. Yeah. Da'am Rav Abohu, Ra'a Zu Aya, because Rav Abohu says the Ra'a is another name for the Aya. So again, not like Rav Chista, who said the Ra'a is the Da'a, and then the Aya is the Daya, and they're different birds. Rav Abohu says the Ra'a is the Aya. The Lama Nikra Shema Ra'a. Why is it called Ra'a? Shiroya B'yoseh, because it has very sharp vision. V'cheinu Omer, in fact, you have a pasuk that expresses this, a pasuk in Iyov, Nesiv lo yada'oi ayit, a path that the ayit, which is some kind of bird of prey, like a vulture or something, maybe an eagle, did not know it. V'loish lafatu ein ayah, and that the eye of the ayah did not see it. In other words, the point is we're talking about a very hidden path that even an ayah, which has extremely short vision, cannot see it. So we see, therefore, that an ayah has extremely short vision, and therefore that justifies the name Ra'a for it.
No other bird has
a sharp vision.
It
has a sharp vision, right. Tana, and in fact, we learn in the Braisa, this bird has such sharp vision, it's able to stand in Bavel and see a carcass on the ground in Eretz Yisrael. On the side, here it says Guzma Katani. Well, Guzma Katani, it's a little bit of a Guzma, but there are Midrashim that talk about that an ayah flies extremely high.
It's on the border, it's not a Guzma.
Well, fine, okay, but Guzma means like an exaggeration, but it's a figure of speech. But there still is the fact, there are Midrashim that mention something like that the ayah flies many, many milim up high in the sky, and it's able to sweep out a vast area and be able to see very extremely sharply. So it's not an eagle, Papashtos. I think the one common translation for it is a kite, which is a bird that is known to have very, very sharp, that flies very high and is known to have very sharp vision.
Yeah.
I don't know. Sure. I can probably find a picture.
K-Y-T-E.
K-I-T-E. Kite, like a kite that kids fly, but it's the name of a bird. Let's see. There's two possibilities. A kite or a buzzard. Actually, it's a buzzard that has a very sharp vision, rather.
A buzzard, yeah.
A buzzard, yeah.
What's a kite? This is a kite?
The top one is a kite, the bottom one is a buzzard.
So it's a bird of prey.
Oh, yeah, of course. We're talking about birds of prey over here.
Mm-hmm. What's this? What's this thing?
It's the English sign. All right, let's go on. I got it. Somebody sent it to me. Okay, let's go on. So the point is, Bohu is saying that the Ra'a is the same as the Ayah, not like Rav Chisda had understood that the Ra'a is the Daya, but that's a different bird than the Ayah. This, by the way, this verse about Emetus Bebovel, Roy Nevel, Eretz Yisrael, there's a famous verse that says on it, you have people like that, like they sit in Chutzlaret and look for all the force of Eretz Yisrael, like all they can see in Eretz Yisrael is Nevelus and other. Yeah. Yeah.
There's also people in Eretz Yisrael.
Well, this is also true. Yeah. This is also true. All right. So the question is, so let's figure out like this. Midi Ra'a Hainu Ayah, if you're telling me that the Ra'a is the same as the Ayah, Mikwal the Da'a Lab Hainu Ra'a. Then on the face of it, the Da'a can't be the same as the Ra'a, because at this point, the Gemara is not assuming that they're all different names for the same bird, even though we just said that, the Gemara didn't spell that out. So on the face of it then, on the face of it, the Ra'a and the Da'a are two different things. So we're back to the question, Mechti Mishnah Torah Isufi Godasa, given that Devarim is meant to add to what we already knew from Vayikra, Maishna Hacha Dichtiv Da'a, is Devarim, yeah. Maishna Hacha Dichtiv Da'a, Maishna Hasem Deloi Ktiv Da'a. So why would it say Da'a in Vayikra and not say and not repeat it again in Devarim? El Olav Shmamina, that must be the proof from that very thing that it's actually Da'a V'ra'a V'aya Achati, that all those three have the same name.
So there's Da'a in
Vayikra, and Ra'a and Ayah in Devarim.
Right.
Okay. But then we're not done yet. Umidu Ra'a Hainu Ayah. Fine. If we assume then that the Ra'a is the same as the Ayah, we call the Daya Lav Hainu Ayah. That seems to imply, though, we still assume at this point that Abahu is going to have 24 birds. We haven't yet gotten to the point of figuring out that Abahu doesn't necessarily have 24. Okay, one second. So far, what we're saying is Rabbah would identify three of the four of them as the same. We didn't yet say that he identifies Daya as the same as them, because the Gemara is still assuming at this point we would rather be able to say that Rabbah also has 24 birds. So the question is, in that case, we call the Daya Lab Hainu Ayah, so then the implication would seem to be that the Daya is not the same as the Ayah.
And it
has 24. Then the question would be, Maishna Hasim Dechtiv Lamineu Ayah, or Maishna Hasim Dechtiv Lamineu Ayah El Adaya. Then why would it move the word Laminehu from the Ayah in Vayikra to the Daya in Devarim? El Shmamina. So therefore, that is where we end up with Rabbahu proving this point. Da'a V'ra'a Daya V'aya Achati. All those four birds are the same thing. And therefore, we do wind up having to say that Abahu is saying there were only 23 rather than 24. Because otherwise, there would be no reason to take the word Lamina and move it from the Ayah to the Dara. And by the same token, he's saying that the Ra'a of Devarim is the same as the Da'a of Vayikra, and that both of those are identical with the Ayah. It's called Ayah because that's its proper name, and it's called Ra'a because it has very short vision. And therefore, according to Abahu, you wind up with only 23 non-kosher birds.
And that's because there's no...
Because otherwise there'd be no reason to exclude something that was mentioned in Vayikra and not mentioned in Devarim, namely the Da'a. And there'd also be no reason to take lamina from the ayah and move it to the daya in Devarim. So therefore, that implies that all of them must be the same bird. So not like Rav Chista, who understood that we're talking about two different pairs of birds over here. Rav Abahu would understand that we're talking about four names for the same bird, and therefore he winds up saying that there were only 23.
There's no reason to move the mina
from daya, from ayah.
Not
to move it from Vayikra to Devarim, to move it to a different bird, from ayah in Vayikra to daya in Devarim. There'd be no reason to do that if it weren't for the fact that they're the same bird. So Rav Chista also agreed with that. That's why Rav Chista said the ayah and the daya are the same bird. The difference, the point of argument between Rav Abahu and Rav Chista is that Rav Abahu starts with the assumption that the ra'a mentioned at the beginning of the pasuk in Devarim is the same as the ayah mentioned the next thing in the pasuk.
Right.
And given that we know the ayah and the daya must be the same thing because of the luminati, and we know that da and ra must be the same thing because one's in Vayikra and one's in Devarim, and it shouldn't have been excluded in Devarim, therefore that leads Rav Abahu to say that all four of them are the same thing. As opposed to Rav Chista doesn't accept that the ayah is also called ra'a. So therefore, according to him, you actually wind up with 24. You have the Da-Ra, which is one name mentioned in Vayikra, the other in Devarim. And you have the Ayah-Daya, which is another bird that is mentioned, that where one of the names is mentioned in Vayikra, and both of them are mentioned in Devarim.
So they both disagree on just one point.
So they disagree on that one point, whether the Ra-Da is the same as the Ayah-Daya, or are they two different birds.
Right.
Rav Chista says they're not. Rav Abahu says they are. Yeah.
After you.